Hello everyone and welcome to JFG tonight for this review of the news, including a news item that I couldn't talk about yesterday because I was in the debate, but very interesting, this Brian Laundry follow-up. We know that we had looked at the story, and my conclusion, sorry, I'm gonna have to up the volume. Hello. It's like someone played with my volume. All right. Hello. Okay. So Brian Laundry, we had reviewed this story, and it had become clear that Gabby Petito was not an angel. She was an abusive woman who was physically abusing him and who was also psychologically abusing him. We had seen this as part of the police interaction with Brian Laundry. Brian Laundry always as a victim of abuse, he always defending his girlfriend, thinking, of course, she's the best that I could ever find, so I might as well endure the abuse. But we now and then there was the killing of Gabby Petito, and I had my doubts. I had my doubts that this whole story happened in the way described, which is Brian Laundry is just an evil guy and he just decided to kill her because he's crazy or something like this. To me, there's always been a hidden question, a hidden thing, which is in what kind of circumstance did he end up killing her? Was it that she totally harassed him, annoyed him, became totally unbearable, and as the yoga granola guy that he was, he couldn't take it anymore. His sun energy was at its lowest, and he decided to crack her neck. That was something I was imagining, some kind of extremely abusive moment where he didn't see anything, any other solution than killing her. But we now have the notebook of Laundry, so we'll look at it. He pulls a story that, I don't know, it seems very bizarre. He pulls a reason for why you would have killed her that I didn't expect. But I think he's hiding things, but I think he's not as much lying as he's made out to be in the mainstream media. Anyway, we will get to it, but we already have super chats coming in, so let me address this. Yesterday I was on a modern day debate. This was the debate: is science more compatible with atheism or theism? It was a total loss of time. I think I'm going to blacklist perspective philosophy. I'm not interacting with this guy anymore. Because he simply came to the debate making his usual case, totally ignoring the subject of the debate. So I find myself against a guy who just blabbers just meaningless stuff that had nothing to do with the question we had engaged on. So I'm not going to talk ever to this guy again. It is not worth it. All he's trying to do is nitpick and, oh my God, let me point out something very deep here. And no, he should have his philosophy license taken away. He has an English accent, isn't he, in England? There must be philosophy licenses there. It should be taken away. It's not even profound. It's not even interesting. He's treating scientific statements with double standards. He's not applying his own thinking to his own. You know, if you're going to be critical about everything, yeah, you can fall in the Cartesian doubt if you want. But you're going to have to doubt everything. Because if you think that it's a problem that scientists have feelings and they approach the world with their feelings and with their perception organs, and if you believe that's a fundamental issue for science, you're going to have to realize that you are approaching your rationality and your philosophy with the exact same interface, the human brain. And so if I'm wrong to be trusting my scientific material, my scientific equipment, just because, oh my God, it's self-justifying. You are using your senses to conclude that this reality exists. You are also using your senses to conclude that God exists. You are using your rational or quasi-rational processes in your brain. Therefore, it's going to end up as bad as you think science is. Your theism will be equally bad. That's what's needed to address perspective philosophy's side, but it wasn't the subject of the debate. The debate is science more compatible with atheism or theism? Now, we had Saul actually addressing this aspect of the debate. I mean, if you want to make a case for this question on the theism side, you basically have to come with evidence from nature, like Saul did, and say, that can only be God. That's the only thing you can do, really. It's built in the subject of the debate. So Saul was honest, but at the same time, because of perspective philosophy, it didn't get a chance at all to make his case. So we were spammed, basically. This debate got spammed by perspective philosophy. He is completely deluded. He is not interacting with reality. He lives in his inside world. Let's leave him at that. Going forward, I'm not interacting with this guy. Dino Legovic says, truck off the philosophy and intellectual register. Is there an appeal process for emotional disingenuous idiots? I didn't watch the debate. I know there is a God. Okay. Pineapple Platypotamus says, some Christian should write a conversation book talking to JF. That would help everyone, really. Yes, that would be an interesting one, but you need an open Christian. Because if you have a Christian that's trying to win, you end up like perspective philosophy. Although I wouldn't consider him a Christian. I think he's some kind of Buddhist, over-educated Buddhist, you know. There's a point at which you reach the Lisa Simpson threshold in your God beliefs. I think perspective philosophy is well beyond that. He's somewhere between Lisa Simpson and the sun. Locke Shed says, JF, debate sticks on abortion on the crucible. Sure, I'll debate sticks on abortion on the crucible. Just make it happen. You want me to contact Andrew here. I'll write to Andrew. Andrew, my crowd wants me to debate sticks on the crucible on abortion. Are you in contact with him? There you go. Done, sir. Anything else? Robert Paulson sends a super chat. By the way, if you'd like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey is my favorite platform for super chats. It is the right place to support the show. Alternatively, you can also use Entropy. It's very good. Just like Robert Paulson has just done, he has sent a super chat on Entropy. He says, JF. JF, can you try to Stillman Saul's position that junk DNA debunks evolution? Much disrespect to James, by the way, for sleeping through the debate. Perspective philosophy was out of control. Yeah, it's becoming a problem for James, because James has this laid-back approach, which is okay if you have very good debater and honest debaters on the two sides. But if you have one side like perspective philosophy who comes in, announces a subject but doesn't address the actual subject and bait and switch to another subject, it's the job of the moderator to keep it on point, and your channel will lose credibility eventually if you invite this kind of guy too often. In the end, I was the only one who ever said a word about the main subject from the atheist perspective. You know, it's the whole, if you found a watch on another planet, how would you tell if this watch comes from nature or if it comes from an intelligent being. And there would be features like the fine aspects of the mechanism that couldn't possibly have emerged from a physical accident. Whereas if you have a watch that is more like a little branch falling on the ground and showing a little shadow from the sun onto the ground, and the shadow rotates because the planet rotates, that would be like more accidental. That is the only comment ever done in this debate about the main subject, other than Saul's point, of course, which was on the TS side. Now, T-Jump has been quite good. He's been surprising me positively, because I've seen T-Jump be not so good in some other debates. And yesterday I found him, he tried honestly engaging with a dishonest man perspective philosophy. So there are limits to this. You cannot, he's going to drag you in a swamp of confused ideas. But he did it very good, and he made his point. All his points are well stated. So I was very satisfied with T-Jump's performance. I didn't want to step over it too much. So I got engaged passively with perspective philosophy, just trying to conclude the T-Jump, because T-Jump was not aggressive enough, in my view, to perspective philosophy. So I was letting him make his case, and then I was giving the last punch just to close it on this idiot that perspective philosophy is. One other thing, you know, he was claiming throughout this debate that T-Jump is a transcendental idealist. I didn't know the definition of the word, so I didn't contest this, but now that I look at it, it's ridiculous to believe that anything T-Jump said it requires transcendental idealism. Kant means that his philosophical approach to knowledge transcends mere consideration of sensory evidence and requires an understanding of the mind's innate modes of processing that sensory evidence. There is no transcending that T-Jump has spoken of. There is no transcending, and so this is not something that's required for T-Jump's position from yesterday. So Robert Paulson says, JF, can you try to steelman Saul's position that junk DNA debunks evolution? Much disrespect to James, by the way, for sleeping through the debate. Perspective philosophy was out of control. Yes, James failed there, but it's the style of James. And this is why blood sports were leading to better, more aligned, more intellectual debates. It's because the host had an interest in the debate. In today's world, where there's this whole trend of we are neutral, we are a neutral platform, we welcome all ideas, you end up welcoming a lot of crap and a lot of spam also. Now, steelmanning Saul's position that junk DNA debunks evolution. It's a very hard... Wait a minute. It's a very hard position to steelman, because it's a fundamentally wrong position. But if I was to try to make the best close to steelman, it would go as follows. I'm Saul. Okay, let me put myself in the mind of an Asian man who believes in God. So that's what he's saying. The recent findings from science are that junk DNA isn't junk DNA at all. It is functional. And so the current understanding from science is that there was a function to something that was pointed to by scientists before as junk DNA. So it is not junk DNA, because the whole sense of calling it junk DNA was to say that it had no function. And in fact, calling it junk DNA was a result of a, it was a prediction from the theory of evolution. It is fundamental to the theory of evolution that junk DNA, I'm still just talking in the name of Sal, okay? Don't clip this this moment and claim it that it's mine. I'm still meaning Sal. The theory of evolution requires junk DNA to be present because it's a prediction from principles A, B, C from the theory of evolution. Therefore, the new discoveries of science prove that the theory of evolution is wrong because it had predicted junk DNA and there's no junk DNA. That would be the Stillman. The problem with the Stillman is that the theory of evolution doesn't require, impose, or even like needs junk DNA. Junk DNA is a label that was given by some scientists because they couldn't find the function of some parts of DNA. If it turns out they do have a function, the theory of evolution explains why. And if it turns out they don't have a function, the theory of evolution is absolutely open to the idea that something doesn't have a function in the organism as long as it doesn't handicap the organism too much. Dino Legovich says, junk DNA is just DNA that hasn't jumped to where you want. Yes, it's DNA that, that is not doing what we would want it to do. Lendald says, but is that no function claim, not just some pop science pseudo-explanation anyway? Yeah, to begin with, the very concept of junk DNA is not a fundamental concept that evolutionary biologists would take seriously. It's it was a bunch of biochemists, really, and molecular biologists who were just treating the cell as an experimental subject, and they were like, oh, we can't find what this DNA does. And so they, it's a little bit a consequence of the modern publishing system of science where you have to find a sexy concept. And the word junk DNA was used in peer-reviewed publication, but precisely as this kind of, oh, let's build a concept around this crap we found on DNA. Because everyone, every PhD student, every researcher are all trying to argue that they all have to argue to survive in academia. I found something that's worth calling a new name for it. And junk DNA came a little bit that way. Now, it was taken very autistically by these creationists. And they started DNA, they started like going insane about it, as if it was one of the fundamental pillars of science. You gotta have your junk DNA. Do you even life form, bro? You don't have your junk DNA? You're not even Darwinian, bro. That's literally what's been happening. And for years, I remember being on the internet in like 2006, 2010. They've been arguing with bloggers, like people like PZ Myers. Like, oh my God. Junk DNA. And PZ Myers, on the other hand, you know, as a secularist, didn't help the whole case by seriously engaging with this whole junk DNA thing and insisting there is junk DNA. It's like, bro, show yourself a little more plastic, because if PZ Myers 12 years ago says on his blog, there is junk DNA and that's why the theory of evolution is right, the thing is, in the next 100 years, if a single scientist finds, oh, here's this little bit of junk DNA and here's what it does and we missed it, then it all looks ridiculous. You've all put the theory of evolution on the shoulders of junk DNA when it shouldn't. And these autistic Sal Cordova type, they're just gonna think, oh my God, PZ Meyer said it was needed, and now we prove that it's wrong, and so, oh my God, everything is wrong. It's so such crap. We live in such a crappy world. It's impossible to connect with people, have them understand. People are just too stupid. It's ridiculous. Even the people who blog about specialist subject are fucking stupid. It's such a shame. And yeah, yesterday's debate is hard on my heart, you know, because this I've been knowing forever. It's not like I'm surprised from anything yesterday, but people are just fucking stupid. They're not worth talking to. They're not worth debating with. The fucking crowds are a bunch of fucking idiots. And that's just life. That's why I'm farming lettuce. It's just, I don't even like lettuce, but I prefer lettuce than this fucking insane world we live in of human beings. Silver Spider says, Jeff should have just said junk DNA is transcendental DNA. Not a good idea. John Drake says, that perspective philosophy dude is a dishonest debater, kind of a douche. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why it's really from an audience benefit perspective. I don't think it's worth engaging with him anymore. Dino Legovic says, you have graduated with honors once you realize people are fucking stupid. Absolutely. So Brian Laundrie, Gabby Petito's confession, experts weighed in on admitted killers' claims. This is all lies. So let's have a look at the whole text. Because it was handwritten like this, it was hard to read. So I've gathered a computerized version. Someone was kind enough to type it in words. So let's read the whole thing without much comments for now. Lapitop says, hiccups are annoying. What's the best trick to get rid of them? Fill a glass of water. Put a spoon in the glass of water. Bring the glass of water to your mouth. Take the spoon. Put it on your forehead right in the middle here. And drink the whole glass of water while holding the spoon in equilibrium on your forehead. And then you stop the hiccup. I don't know why it works. I'm a specialist of respiratory physiology, and I've experimented. I've even done research on monkey yawning, fish breathing. And hiccups are a big mystery of the universe. Dino Legovic says, okay, I am holding the spoon. It was Lapitop that was asking for hiccup help. So did you have hiccups too? Anyways, let's read the whole. Brian Laundrie, this is the guy who killed Gabby Petito. And he explains in a letter that was found just close to his body. But we didn't know about it. It had been kept secret somehow. And now we have access to it. Gabby, I wish I was right at your side. I wish I could be talking to you right now. I'd be going through every memory we've made, getting even more excited for the future. I can't live without you. I've lost every day we could have spent together. Every holiday. I'll never get to play with unintelligible again. Never go hiking with TJ. I loved you more than anything. I can't bear to look at our photos to recall great times, because it is why I cannot go on. When I close my eyes, I will think of laying on the roof of the van, falling asleep to the sight of a meteor shower at the Crystal Gazer. I will always love you. If you were reading Gab's journal, looking at the photos from our life together, flipping through old cards, you wouldn't want to live a day without her. knowing that every day you'll wake up without her, you wouldn't want to wake up. I'm sorry to everyone this will affect. Gabby was the love of my life, but I know adored by many. I'm so very sorry to her family because I love them. I would consider her younger siblings my best of friends. I am sorry to my family. This is a shock to them, as well as a terrible grief. They loved as much, if not more, than me. A new daughter to my mother, an aunt to my nephews. Please do not make this harder for them. This occurred as an unexpected tragedy. So here we start with the explanation of what happened at the moment of death of Gabby Petito. Rushing back to our car, trying to cross the streams of Spread Creek before it got too dark to see, too cold, I hear a splash and a scream. I could barely see. I couldn't find her for a moment. Shouted her name. I found her breathing heavily, gasping my name. She was freezing cold. We had just came from the blazing hot national parks in Utah. The temperature had dropped to freezing and she was soaking wet. I carried her as far as I could down the stream towards the car, stumbling, exhausted in shock when my knees buckled and I knew I couldn't safely carry her. I started a fire and spooned her as close to the heat. She was so thin, had already been freezing too long. I couldn't at the time realize that I should have started a fire first, but I wanted her out of the cold back to the car. From where I started the fire, I had no idea how far the car might be. Only knew it was across the creek. When I pulled Gabby out of the water, she couldn't tell me what hurt. She had a small bump on her forehead that eventually got larger. Her feet hurt, her wrist hurt, but she was freezing, shaking violently. While carrying her, she continually made sounds of pain. Laying next to her, she said little lapsing between violent shakes, gasping in pain, begging for an hand to her pain. She would fall asleep and I would shake her awake, fearing she shouldn't close her eyes if she had a concussion. She would wake in pain, start the whole painful cycle again, while furious that I was the one waking her. She wouldn't let me try to cross the creek, thought like me that this fire would go out in her sleep and she would freeze. I don't know the extent of Gabby's injury, only that she was in extreme pain. I ended her life. I thought it was merciful, that it is what she wanted. But I see now all the mistakes I made. I panicked. I was in shock. But from the moment I decided to took away her pain, I knew I couldn't go on without her. I rushed home to spend any time I had left with my family. I wanted to drive north and let James or TJ kill me, but I wouldn't want them to spend time in jail over my mistake, even though I'm sure they would have liked to. I am ending my life not because of a fear of punishment, but rather because I can't stand to live another day without her. I've lost our whole future together. Every moment we could have cherished. I'm sorry for everyone's loss. Please do not make life harder for my family. They lost a son and a daughter, the most wonderful girl in the world. Gabby, I'm sorry. I have killed myself by this creek in the hopes that animals may tear me apart, that it may make some of her family happy. Please pick up all of my things. Gabby hated people who litter. Holy shit. Pick up all of my things. Gabby hated people who litter. That is exactly how you would expect a granola environmentalist couple to end this saga of death, love, and vegetarianism. Absolutely shocking. Now, people on Fox News say it's all crap, it's all a lie. He says this to remove some of his guilt, to kind of make it more digestible what he's done. I would be extremely careful at calling a lie. The statements clearly communicated by a man just before he knew he was going to die. Because this guy just wrote that before committing suicide. He knew that his reputation didn't matter. So unless he was a if he was a narcissist, then someone can love himself and love his own reputation so much that they wanted to go further after death. But Brian Laundrie has never struck me as someone who cares at all about his reputation. In fact, he was not into this whole Gabby Petito YouTubing kind of thing. So I would find it extremely surprising that Brian Laundrie cares about what we think of him. And because I would find this very surprising, I don't see the motivation in lying here. There is one motivation that I could perceive in lying, and it goes as follows. Although Brian Laundrie wasn't about his reputation much, it was very much about cucking to Gabby Petito. Just like you see here, he doesn't care about his own reputation, but he cares enough about her reputation because he knows she cared. He knows that she cared about her reputation. That's why he says Gabby hated people who litter. It's to kind of make an homage to her. So at the moment of his death, Brian Laundrie certainly cares about the reputation of Gabby. So he would be ready to lie for Gabby. But I still don't have any evidence that he cared about his own reputation. So it's very hard for me to read the rest and say he's lying about it because he doesn't want to look like a murderer. I'm not sure that he has the psychological motivation to do that. Robert Paulson says, please compost my biodegradable granola sack as Gabby would have wanted. It's so bizarre to see a story of murder like this, or as he presents it, some kind of euthanasia. And people were pointing, even if all his story was true, euthanasia is illegal in this state. Well, okay, but there's still a difference between someone who makes an act motivated by hate or annoyance and someone who makes an act motivated by empathy. So I don't know what to do of all this. I find it extremely weird that somehow she would fall in a creek and, you know, just purely accidentally, and be so damaged by this that he would think it's worth to kill her. And so here's a couple of hypotheses where this could make sense. One hypothesis, my first hypothesis, probably the one I find most likely, is that Brian Laundrie is lying about what happens. He's lying to protect Gabby Petito. And the reason Gabby Petito was messed up physically is that she committed a suicide attempt. Because here's the thing. The couple was in high trouble. They were yelling at each other. They were in constant conflict. They were attracting the attention of citizens and police. It was a highly emotional couple, and I have assessed that she had some kind of disorder, perhaps bipolar, perhaps borderline. She could very well have been deciding to commit suicide in nature, in the hashtag van life, that would be the moment that she chose the way she wanted it. And she may have missed her shot. She may have jumped from a mountain that was not so high. She may have tumbled down the mountain or something like this. Or she may have jumped from some structure that wasn't high enough. That is one possibility. The reason I like this possibility is it explains how this whole murder euthanasia thing happened in so close proximity as with the emotional trouble of the couple. Because if not, if you don't have an explanation of that kind, then you have to think that all of it was an accident. That somehow, yeah, she slipped on a rock and somehow broke her neck after falling accidentally by slipping on a rock. Or something major that would make her shake and make her in extreme pain. This explains the whole correlation between the couple's problem, her mental problem, and the fact that she would have attempted suicide. Now, why would Brian Laundry not reveal this? Perhaps because she was never able to talk and explain to him that she attempted to commit suicide, so he doesn't quite know for sure. Or perhaps just to protect her reputation, because he doesn't want Gabby Petito to be remembered as a suicidal person. And then his act of strangling her would be in that context, not just empathy because she was in pain, but also the act of a man understanding that his psycho girlfriend will always be tormented by her mental problems, and that she was asking him to die and he led her to die. He would basically have helped her commit suicide. That is just one possibility. The other possibility is this is really what we could call a case of mistaken euthanasia. Brian Laundry, with his vigil brain, like, somehow is missing a connection that you and I have. He is so fucking stupid that he thinks that someone who's shaking from hypothermia needs to be put down. He took these movies where they're like a commando of super elite army guys, and one of them gets a little injury to the ankle, and the other guy is like, "We have to get rid of you." He literally did this to his beautiful, perfect, blonde, 10 out of 10 girlfriend. Absolutely insane. Robert Paulson says, "She's cold, we gotta put her down." That is literally what would have happened. And then you're gonna tell me that, so for everything there to be true, there's this ridiculous aspect that he's so unaware of bodies and how they work that he's not able to evaluate this thing. The second thing is, for him to have done this as he describes, he has to have abandoned her body basically like a couple hundred meters from the car. And he says in his letter, he insists on saying, "From where I started the fire, I had no idea how far the car might be." He carried her body up to the point where it would take maybe if he advances slowly, maybe 5 minutes, bring her back to the car. So you have to believe that this 5 minutes, he couldn't do it. He fell with his knees and, "Oh my God, why have you forsaken me? I cannot do these 5 more minutes." Absolutely bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. And on top of it, he justifies in the letter saying, "Well, when I started the fire, I didn't know the car was so close." That is the only clue I have from this letter that there may be some lie going on here. Because he's trying to think what we will think, and he's trying to preempt it. He's basically what we would call, he's on the defensive. You can only say these things if you're on the defensive. He's trying to explain basically why we will find a fire basically 5 minutes away from the car by foot. And so there is some lying going on. There is some defensive posture that is not a pure confession of the heart. Those are my two hypotheses. The third hypothesis is presented by Fox News, which is Brian Laundry is just a murderer. And he made up these whole excuses because he doesn't want to be judged. He doesn't want his family and the public in general to think of him as a murderer. To which I would say, well, he's a very unintelligent guy if he thinks this letter will help. And secondly, I have no evidence that Brian Laundry cares at all about reputation. In fact, he's always been basically trying to make sure that Gabby Petito wasn't becoming a YouTuber. He didn't want any of this. He didn't want any celebrity. He was truly a guy with his yoga carpet, just, and his, like, these dirty granola mixes that they do with yogurt. I mean, I don't know. These three hypotheses to me are equally viable. But it's quite shocking. I don't think the Fox News one is a serious one. I don't think he's just a murderer. He's never done it before. He's done it specifically in the case of Gabby Petito, specifically at that moment. There's something, the truth is out there. There's something we're not being told. There's something he's trying to hide. But now he's dead, he committed suicide, so we'll never know, probably. That is so unfortunate. What an unfortunate story. The story, and it's probably the last time I talk about it, the story of Gabby Petito and Brian Laundry. Oh my god, this guy. Imagine this guy was an audience member of JF. What do you think would be my counseling to this guy? Well, you have a girlfriend. It's time you eat some meat so that your sperm can be motile and just inseminate this girl and have babies. I wish I could have had a chance to talk with Brian before this happens, but I didn't. 1 year after his death, John McAfee corpse still being held by government, fueling claims of cover-up. It has been an entire year since John McAfee died, allegedly by suicide, in a Spanish prison, and since that day, authorities have refused to release his body, and they are bringing attention to a tweet of his that was saying, I am content in here, I have friends, the food is good, all is well. Know that if I hang myself, a la Epstein, it will be no fault of mine. So more conspiracies around the death of John McAfee. My judgment at the moment of his death was that he probably killed himself, but because he's a clown, you know, he's going to try to make you believe that he didn't kill himself, but he's totally the kind of guy who would lie about this and then do it. But perhaps I'm wrong. Perhaps there is dirty play here. Biden and the G7 will ban Russian gold imports, having sparked hyperinflation in European gas price and record energy costs around the globe, with their poorly conceived and implemented Russian energy sanctions, which have backfired spectacularly, allowing Moscow to reap record energy export profits and China and India to buy oil far below spot prices while leaving US motorists paying record prices at the pump. On Sunday, the Biden admin, alongside the G7, announced that they will ban Russian gold imports to further impose financial cost on Moscow for its invasion of Ukraine. It's going to turn in the same way. It's going to advantage some nations. Some nations will say, all right, we're taking Russian gold, and they will end up having gold at lower price than us, and they'll end up wasting less money on that. US will continue to provide seamless access to abortion In the military, according to the defense secretary, he issued a statement saying, "Nothing is more important to me or to this department than the health and well-being of our service members, the civilian workforce, and the DoD families. I am committed to taking care of our people and ensuring the readiness and resilience of our force. The department is examining this decision closely and evaluating our policies to ensure we continue to provide seamless access to reproductive health care as permitted by federal law." Yes, it's going to happen, but I think it's still a good thing how Roe v. Wade turns out. Most women will have access to abortion in some form, but at least the people who have access to abortion will be punishing themselves. So see, here you'll have the people in the military will have more access to abortion. Well, it's going to have an evolutionary punishment for people who are working for the federal government in the military. So I'm fine with them getting abortion. I'm not a fan of trying to stop other women who I'm not related to and I'm not the father. I'm not going to intervene at all if they end up killing their babies. But I want the genetic interests to be aligned. I want the Republican states where there are right-wing, traditional living people, I want them to be able to enforce a moral code that increases their birth rate. And then the rest of society, let them have all the abortion they want. Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade. Of course, that was the big triggering. Biden has now announced that he is not for court packing. He had already said this in the past, but it was reconfirmed by the White House press secretary. So a lot of Democrats want to pack the U.S. Supreme Court, but thankfully, Biden is not for it, and anyways, I don't think the Senate would be warm to the idea. So we're safe on this side. We're still going to benefit and enjoy a somewhat right-wing Supreme Court for an arbitrary amount of time, an undetermined amount of time. Robert Paulson sends another super chat. He says, "Happy late birthday, JF." Well, that was in April. More than 2 months ago, but thank you. "Regarding the revolutionary phenotype, is the forming of a genetic layer inevitable? If not, will resisting the revolution become more costly over time? If so, is it more efficient to learn to resist than prevent?" I don't know the distinction that you do here between resist and prevent. Because as far as I'm concerned, preventing is done through resistance. If you're resisting, then you are trying to prevent the revolutionary phenotype from happening. I guess that what you call resist would be someone who resists while the revolutionary phenotype is happening, versus preventing, I guess that you are talking about someone who would make sure that it never happens at all. I certainly believe that prevention, stopping it from the beginning, killing it in the egg, is the right way. It's the best way. I don't think necessarily that resisting is a bad idea. I think it's great. But if you can make it not happen at all, it is definitely less costly. Because as soon as it happens a little bit, you have another faction of humanity that starts competing with you, that starts even charming people on your side and saying, "Hey, join us, join the revolutionary phenotype." So definitely preventing is done at a lower cost, and you have more chances of success if it's accomplishable. If you resist, then you're always on the watch, and there will be military, civil conflicts of all kinds. There will be takeover of the corporate world, of the production facilities, and the revolutionary phenotype can incrementally control more and more of society if you let it build that way. Now, is resisting the revolution more costly over time? I think you could make a case that it is, but it would only be through an arbitrary attribution of value. Because, like, think about the Amish, for example. It's the best parallel here. Think about the Amish. Is their resistance against our culture, you know, the fact that they don't, they won't integrate the memes of the modern world, is it getting more costly over time? Well, if you compare the Amish to a mainstream Christian man of 100 years ago, the Amish to mainstream difference is not very big. There was no car, not much technology. There may have been a couple of different religious principles, but that's it. Now compare the Amish to an average Christian man of 2022, and the difference becomes major. But can we say that the Amish has increased their cost of resistance? Only through the lens that you assume that they should benefit from the current world. Only through the lens that you assume that the current world is good, and that by missing out on it, they are having a cost imposed to them. If you take the Amish existence, and that's an existentialist approach to understanding morality and value, consider the Amish existence independent of the rest of the world and its progress. Then the Amish of today is living the same life as his ancestors of 100 years ago. And the fact that there are opportunities that they're missing out on doesn't matter, because the level of life that he's living is equal or better than the level of life of his ancestor, and we shouldn't impose a cost calculation that involves an assumption that somehow you have to follow the mainstream of your current society. Because if you take that assumption, you're working under a leftist assumption. You're working under something that will inevitably lead you to progressivism. If the average world around you is always what's to follow, and if you define yourself as being less than and I have to kind of reach that average, then you've set yourself for progressivism. You've set yourself from not determining the reasons and value of your own existence independent of what goes on in the world around you. So that's a long answer to your super chat, but I would say no. If continued resistance may be harder against the revolutionary phenotype as it increases in its presence in society, but continued existence is the only option in front of this expansion, and I wouldn't say that it's more costly. I would say that there are just more and more violence and genocidal forces being applied to the naturals. And he says, is the forming of a genetic layer inevitable? Well, as I show in my book, if you don't form a genetic layer, you don't do a phenotypic revolution. So if there's no trickster printing mechanism and replicator tango that comes and re-edits DNA as it is, then what you have is not a phenotypic revolution. What you have is just a regular phenotype. And that regular phenotype will evolve just like regular evolution. Pineapple Platypotamus says, oh, twice means DNA to RNA and RNA to proteins? Yes, and then you can consider the possibility of a third one, which is from proteins to the quantum world, if quantum Darwinism is true. So that would be three phenotypic revolutions. Explosive report confirms expensive CIA stealth network of spies and commandos inside Ukraine. I'm not surprised. And yet, the Ukraine government is still losing, even despite the American support, and the Russian forces are progressing toward Lysychansk, and they have basically taken Severodonetsk. So, despite all these expenses, we are using these CIA people to just waste American money, really. Imagine that we wouldn't have given any support. We would have saved money. We would have even saved human suffering, because then the war would have been won quicker. We've just extended the amount of suffering and time that this war will consume, at no advantage to ourselves. Home showings across US plunged 24%. Home showings have fallen, according to a report. When a potential so a home showing is when a potential buyer takes a private home tour with an agent. So basically, the peak real estate home showing has been happening, and now we are in fact very low compared to anything before. So extremely interesting. We are basically in a depressed housing market. That's much lower than the average you see here. And it's certainly lower than what we've attained in the peak. So it is not a time where you will have ease to sell real estate. Be careful if you've accumulated real estate. It may not be the best time to sell. And in fact, in the year and 3 years that follow, I would expect the prices to take kind of a bump down. So keep your real estate. If you aren't successful at selling in this bubble, give it time and sell in 4 years, 5 years from now, when the society becomes on this other bubble or whatever happens then. 40,000 National Guard troops face unemployment as vaccine deadline is imminent. See, in many places, we've seen people back out of the vaccine mandate. Quebec has allowed back its unvaccinated nurses. Australia has called back its unvaccinated teachers. But the American army, I don't know if they will, because there is still an interest other than medical for the American army. It has been a long dream of the Democrats to turn the police, the justice system, and the army into LGBT cesspools of compliance to the fashionable leftist thinking of today. So they've always hated this whole idea that, oh my God, these places are filled with white men and some black men, but all bro, Jim Bro type of guys. How do we get LGBT people in the army? Well, turns out, perhaps one of the best way is to make a test for free thinking. And there's no better test for free thinking than whether you refuse to take a vaccine. If you refuse to take a vaccine, you're basically from 80 to 95% chance of being a right winger. You are like extremely more likely to be a homeschooler, extremely more likely to be a Republican, a conservative of all kind. And so it's probably the best way you can actually just reset your entire army and give that salary to your leftist voters. It may be what happens, because I don't know that the US Army is necessary at the moment. I don't know that they would care if they lose 40,000 National Guard troops. And they would love to replace these white men with LGBT non-whites. We'll see if it happens. But 40,000, that's a lot. Perhaps they will gain in court also. It's another possibility. So you wouldn't have them being fired if they can win cases in the courts. CDC confirmed post-vax death from blood clotting 2 weeks before alerting the public. The CDC confirmed in late 2021 that a person died from blood clotting after receiving a COVID vaccine that had been linked with an increased risk of blood clotting, but did not alert the public for 2 weeks. This is a pattern. We've shown them, we've seen them do that again and again. They are ultra delayed on passing on any real information that would be disadvantageous to the vaccine. They will jump on a positive finding that says, oh, you have to take the vaccine, but they will delay, wait a couple of weeks before they tell you, oh yeah, you know, this story we've investigated as deep as we could, and it does seem that the vaccine caused a blood clot here. Someone who died, of course. That's absolutely dishonorable, and I hope that the experts lose the confidence of the public forever for what they've done with the COVID thing. Prince Charles, that will be the last news item for tonight. Prince Charles accepted a suitcase with 1 million euros from Qatari Sheikh. Clarence House said Prince Charles received charitable donations and the correct processes were followed regarding those donations after a British newspaper reported the Prince of Wales once accepted a suitcase containing 1 million euros in cash from a Qatari politician. I don't care about this story that much, but it's just funny to me how these people from the English monarchy, they're like children. They are paid by the queen. They have a whole system where they have, where the royal family pays them for just existing, basically, for being representatives of the royal family. And it's so bizarre. And I couldn't help but think that when they do these kind of dirty dealings, it's because they need some money outside of that official system. They want to, they maybe have a little kink, or they have something crazy they want to buy and they cannot get it from their official money because they're afraid it will be tied to their names. And so I'm sure they love getting cash contributions of that kind, because then it's not traceable and then no one will know what you bought with it. Fractal Man says, fuck you, Odyssey. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Rough talk, rough talk. However, it is true that I announced, tick, 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 I announced that I would leave Odyssey on July 1st if my audience is still experiencing buffering. So let me know in the comment section and you guys in the chat. Let me know how much of you are buffering right now. Fractal Man says, sorry for the language, boys, just more buffering. Who is buffering right now? Who is not buffering? Type, I am not buffering. No buffer here. Type this if you are hearing my voice and if you are not buffering. I'm going to give it some time because sometimes after a buffer... Yeah, buffering hard, slight buffering, I buffer. Lots of buffering tonight, not usually though. I am not a bufferer. I am not buffering, no buffer here. Ariel Sorez, not buffering. You know, there's a bunch of people who aren't buffering. And then there's a bunch of people who are buffering. Never buff, buffering all night, not right now. It's like 50-50. Is it because of Odyssey or is it because... Is it the connections of people? It's so hard to figure out. But it needs to stop. I don't want to impose buffering on my crowd. I love you all. That will be it for tonight. Much love. And I will see you all tomorrow.